940 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Idalia is now a Category 2 hurricane, but still picking up steam and could hit Florida tomorrow as a powerful Category 3. Reporter Jason Allen is in Crystal River.
Officials have ordered evacuations in low-lying areas. Many are heeding the warnings, boarding up homes and protecting businesses with sheets of plastic and sandbags.
It has all the possibilities of flooding big time here.
Those planning to ride out the storm have cleared grocery store shelves. Longtime Florida resident Dave Iwanek picked up some essentials and says the predicted storm surge has him worried.
This is different. We haven't seen this kind of water coming. 9 to 12 is
something
to look at.
Storm surge is the biggest concern here. Remember last year, flooding from Hurricane Ian caused more than $100 billion in damage. Governor Josh Green led a delegation of lawmakers through wildfire damage today in Hawaii.
I just want you to know that I will be a resource for you. If you need extra information, if you want to hear the stories, I'll share them with you. And I want to give you my commitment. I will never be political.
Recovery efforts on land there are done, but divers are still searching the water. For now, the death toll still stands at 115. Good news today for millions of Americans.
Today, I'm proud to announce that Medicare has selected the first 10 additional drugs for negotiation under the Inflation Reduction Act. 10 additional. Drugs that treat everything from heart failure, blood clots, diabetes, kidney disease, arthritis, blood cancers, Crohn's disease, and so much more.
The feds still have to negotiate prices, and any changes wouldn't take effect till 2026. The White House confirms a new video does, in fact, show Marine Paul Whelan at a Russian prison camp.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says
it was reassuring to see that he remains, and this is to use his brother's words, unbowed.
She adds that his circumstances are truly unacceptable. The former Marine's brother, David, says it was the first time he has seen what he really looks like since June of 2020. Allison Keyes, CBS News, Washington.
Still no motive or murder weapon more than 24 hours after a shooting at UNC Chapel Hill. Campus Police Chief Brian James.
The firearm used in yesterday's shooting has not been recovered. We continue a thorough search for the firearm and any additional evidence.
The shooter was a grad student. He's in jail now facing murder charges. And Eminem has now banned Vivek Ramaswamy from using any of his music while campaigning for president after the Republican wrapped a cover of Lose Yourself at the state Iowa State Fair. This is CBS News.
When you think of hiring, think of Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Lake Michigan isn't a great lake for swimming today.
A beach hazard statement is in effect now until tomorrow morning for all of the beaches along Lake Michigan, including Sheboygan, Ozaukee, Milwaukee, Racine, Kenosha, and Lake counties. Winds are gusting up to 30 miles per hour and are building waves up to 8 feet high. Dangerous swimming conditions are expected. Strong currents can pull swimmers into deeper water, and high waves can sweep people off of piers. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
A Milwaukee County Sheriff's deputy was accidentally exposed to fentanyl while responding to an overdose-related car crash last week. Authorities say the deputy froze after coming in contact with the drug, which led to another deputy using Narcan to revive him. Police say it happened during a response to a crash on the Fond du Lac Freeway. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that some of what we do in government always is political. It has policy impacts. It has political impacts. But if your raison d'etre and your organizing principle is that my guy wins and your guy loses, the entire country suffers. That is not our call to serve. That is not what we raise our hand and say an oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Did you know your favorite shows and hosts are active on social media too? Find Civic Media on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook and be part of the conversation happening there. And go to our website, civicmedia.us, to learn more about the Civic Media Network.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk on Devil Radio 92.7. Now, here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci. Educated educators talking education.
Oh, it is Tim, not Johnny. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci tonight. Since we talk about education, he's got the kind of back to school night thing with his daughter. So Anya, we said we'll give him a little time off tonight. So Johnny, if you're out there, please don't embarrass your daughters in front of their teachers. It's the worst thing that could ever happen to them. Oh, what a great show, though, we have lined up here today. Our guest, though, and before I introduce her, we were just talking before the show came on. How do we talk about the state of public education? And it's a depressing thing to talk about. And we said, we're not depressing people, but this concept is out there. And like the attacks are relentless. She wrote the book 10 years ago, Losing America's Schools, The Fight to Reclaim Public Education. You can go to her blog, nancybailey.com, to check out her latest kind of a reflection 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of American public schools. Welcome back to Busted Pencils, Nancy Bailey. Nancy, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I wished I had better news and wish things had changed for the better in 10 years. You know, it's hard to look back. And as a writer, I go to write something and realize I've already written about it. You know, how many times can you say play is important for young children? And how many times can you say children need recess and that they don't need to be tested so much and that they need the arts and so on and so forth? I think we all just keep trying to keep the right messages out there and hope for change. You just have to have some hope.
Well, I mean, so is that, you know, as much as we say it's depressing, we look 10 years, you know, 10 years, you wrote the book 10 years later, you're still making, you said the comment, you know, hey, recess, kids, they go together. Is there hope, though, too, because it's reminding people, though, that 10 years later, you know, we haven't made a lot of movement on this. But how do we then potentially, and, you know, we're going to go into the issues that you bring up in your blog at nancybailey.com. But, you know, just thinking between, you know, you and I here, wonder what you think about, I mean, what keeps you positive when you have to write things like this 10 years after you wrote a book called Losing America's Public Schools?
Well, I think our public schools are a very important democratic institution for the nation. And as a teacher, I am so sorry that in all the years that I can remember, we haven't evolved to becoming the greatest system in the world. I mean, instead, it seems like Americans have done nothing but break down this institution and make it sound like it was failed. And right. Now, I think when you look at schools, what's very sad to me is that I think they've succeeded in a lot of ways. I mean, I can understand when parents say, I want to remove my child from this school because they don't have the arts, because they are over-tested, because they don't get good reading programs, because they don't get all these things that they should get. And the people who wanted to privatize schools have essentially ruined the schools. And so, you know, people keep fighting for them, and there are still some very good public schools, I'm sure. But it's primarily, I think, the poor kids that get the brunt of it. And I just see a lot of divisiveness. And I sort of think we can see that in society, don't we?
I think so. Yeah.
This breakup of who we are because everybody's going in their different direction. And public schools, to me, one of the best things about them when they're working well is that they should be able to bring people together. Mm-hmm. And when I was teaching in the 80s, for example, I started teaching in a primarily African-American school, and it was integrated. We did bring a wealthier part of the community into the school, and we worked to make everything work together. And we did a good job of that. And I don't see that happening now. I just see people going in different directions, charter schools wanting to let public funds go towards vouchers and to tax and to private schools. And for me, that's just a real loss for the nation and for bringing us together.
Yeah, I wonder. That concept of bringing us together. Although, in fact, bringing us together. If you're out there, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can call us. Our guest is Nancy Bailey. NancyBailey.com. Her blog. 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of America's public schools. We're talking about that. But, you know, and before we got into it, I said, Nancy, how do we stay hopeful in this? And you kind of, though, and this maybe isn't hope, but you reminded me the intentionality of the public schools of bringing people together. You know, we talked to Carol Burris last week. We've had Diane Ravitch on the show. Isn't that, though, potentially one of the reasons why we see the attack is the realization that a thriving American public school system is a uniting message around democracy and the fear of a fully functioning public school system is really at the heart of, as you say, the intentional unraveling. I mean, at this point now, and you're saying 10 years, you know, we had James Harvey on, who was part of the original commission to write A Nation at Risk 40 years ago, right? You know, and think about that. So the intentional unraveling, it's the intentional because of the fear of what public education represents about what's possible.
That's exactly right. And I think, you know, I think a lot, at least for me, and at my age, I remember A Nation at Risk as really starting this false narrative that our schools were failing and that we have American workers that aren't doing well because of the schools. And we've heard this for 40 years, so people buy it. And, you know, it never was true to begin with. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you keep hearing that narrative over and over again, people start to believe that it's true. And I see that with so many things. In 2014, I wrote one of the best posts, one of the most popular posts anyway, that I think I've ever written about setting children up to hate reading. And yeah, the post ended up with something like 91,000 likes because parents didn't like the idea of having very young children being pushed to read too early. And Facebook kind of removes some of the likes. They've done some strange things with likes lately. I think they want you to pay for them or something. But and it's still several thousand the last I looked. But I've reposted that post, and parents now have come to believe that kindergarten is where children should really learn to read, and that they should be reading before first grade. And they don't see this post as relevant as it was in 2014. So that's really troubling to me, not so much about the post, but just that there's been this change, this change of the belief system, that we have to push our children harder and faster at an earlier level. And I see that even with preschool now, where parents have come to believe that if their children aren't at the beginning stages of reading, that they really are deficient. And that is such a concern for me. And parents will argue, oh, but that isn't a concern for us. We have to have our kids reading soon. Right. And you know, you got to understand why parents feel like that. If their child isn't reading well by third grade, they will fail. Many of these states use retention to fail their kid. And that's devastating for a lot of children. And, you know, that's, I think, where we're at, though.
Yeah, you think about the that overachievement, just pushing this, you know, down, though, and pushing down the achievement. You'd say there's nothing in developmental research, psychological research, that would disagree with what you put out. It's not Nancy Bailey's opinion.
Exactly.
That pushing 3- and 4-year-olds to be readers is, you know, inappropriate and, in fact, developmentally and maybe even socially harmful, because at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 56, play is still really, really important. In fact, constructive, really awesome, well put together kind of exploratory play. In fact, better playgrounds out there. You say investing in play, if you really were concerned about reading achievement, we'd be investing in early childhood. And if we were investing in early childhood, we wouldn't be investing in phonics spelling or phonics flashcards for three-year-olds. We'd be investing in, you know, some safe outdoor adventures for the kids to do. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. The number's 844-967-2789. Our guest is Dr. Nancy Bailey. We're looking at her post 10 years later, the continuing intentional, keyword there, intentional unraveling of America's public schools. You can find this at nancybailey.com. When we get back, though, Nancy, you know, we're going to come up here on the break. We're going to get into the post, because 10 years later, you lay out a massive list of things that we need to be concerned about. Oh, my goodness. I'll just kind of try to name them off here before we go, and then we'll come back to them. Arts assessment, class size, Common Core, corporations and politicians, COVID data, diversity, expectations, media, parents, reading, retention, school board, school choice, school facilities, school libraries, special education, students, teachers, technology, workforce. Those are all them Busted Pencils, fully led at education talk. Education, educators, or E square, or E, yeah, E to the cube. Back in a minute.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west, northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Lows dip down to about 49 tonight, under mainly clear skies, northeast winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Sunny skies and calm tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 70. Clear skies and quiet again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 49. Ample sunshine expected Thursday. Daytime highs approaching 74. 82 Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 70 degrees.
Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, not E squared, Tim, E cubed. I know, I tried to blame that on Anya last time. It wasn't Anya's fault. It's Tim. Tim's always screwing that up. 844-967-2789. We are talking to Dr. Nancy Bailey. We are looking at her post at nancybailey.com 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of America's public schools. Nancy, okay, I went through that long list. We're going to do our best. Let's maybe try two at a time. So what's your concern with arts and assessment?
Well, first of all, every child should have a good art program. Arts aren't frills. Art is very important for the arts' sake. And assessment, of course, has been harmful for how many years? You were part of the opt-out movement, so you know how that helps. And that's not getting any better. In fact, it's worse because it's online and they can data mine, right? And so that's really troubling.
You know what? Talk about that, though, for a second, because you jumped to that one, data and assessment, data collection. You know, how many parents realize what you just said? The fact is, taking the online assessments and the data, give it a little bit of an explanation about what point you're making there. What happens when a student takes an online assessment?
Well, I think that's the question parents should ask. Who gets access to this data? The FERPA laws and COPPA haven't, I know they've been working on it, but and they still, I don't think, protect a child's data like they should. I think some of these programs have rules that you can look up, but there's always they're not always real clear. And President Biden, I thought it was interesting in his last State of the Union address, did mention the data that was being collected on kids. But I mean, in Virginia, for example, the data quality campaign, the governor, Youngkin, hired someone to head education who had been working with the data quality campaign, was not an educator, you know, did not work in the classroom. So what does that tell you? Data is incredibly important. They want to collect data. They wanted to collect it for years. I think it's in, you know, it's just very much a part of our schooling now. And that's part of why they want to privatize schools as well, so they can collect data and track kids for the workforce. Which is, I think, very concerning. So, you know, parents, I don't think do question this, and they should ask questions. And
they should be asking questions about that, but for some reason we keep moving them to be, you know, asking questions about whether or not there is a cat litter in the bathroom or something something crazy. Okay, we're going to try this. So I got a little note from Anya, but Mark has called in. Mark, we're going to see, Mark, if we can hear you. Mark, what's going on?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you for a second. Go for it.
It just is, it's amazing to me that they're trying to cut back on the stuff that makes education valuable to a lot of kids, arts and athletics, and as well as the practical skills, because what is life without aesthetic enjoyment? And apparently that we saw it here, especially in the state of Wisconsin, when Bob Walker wanted to get rid of the Wisconsin idea. Well, their idea apparently is just to have little cogs for the workforce rather than active participating members in all aspects of society.
Well, yeah, Mark, thank you. I'm glad we got that in. But Nancy, sounds like Mark has been reading your post.
Oh, well, that's good.
But, I mean, linking the workforce and recognizing, you know, the aesthetics. You know what? Talk about that, because there is a lot of, you know, kind of like, hey, we are preparing people for the workforce. In fact, even earlier this year, Secretary Cardona kind of pointed out the most important thing public schools are doing are preparing workforce. And sometimes if you push against that, people are going, well, we're all preparing people for the workforce, Tim and Nancy. What do you have against that?
Well, I think as educators and as parents, when we talk about the workforce, we think about our children growing up and sort of self-actualizing what it is they want to do, how they want to use the skills that they learn in school to be able to find the career that they enjoy, even a career that they feel passionate about. But as I know exactly what you're talking about with Education Secretary Cardona's, he did a tweet on Twitter where he was talking more about aligning students to industry. And it really stirred everybody up, because that's not how we look at children. We don't look at kids for, you know, how they're going to fit the need for corporations. We look at children for how they're going to grow up and find the jobs that they self-actualize and want to do. And so I think you saw in that tweet a real bumping of ideas when it comes to workforce and schooling. And that, I think, has been a huge part of the privatization push in our country for years.
I think the way you said that, too, is for people to recognize it's not that we're saying, of course, education doesn't prepare kids to get a job. But the idea that kids are there exclusively to take their place for corporations, that's what we're up against. It's 844-967-2789. It's Busted Pencils. It is E Cubed and more with Nancy Bailey when we get back after the break.
Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM.
Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM.
This is The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. Hurricane Idalia is now a Category 2 storm, but it's expected to be a Cat 3 by the time it hits Florida early tomorrow somewhere in the Big Bend. Governor Ron DeSantis.
You really got to go back to the late 1800s to find a storm of this magnitude that will enter where this one looks like it's going to enter.
The Biden administration releases a list of 10 drugs targeted for price negotiations. Nancy Lamond of AARP says Medicare carefully selected the first batch of drugs.
These 10 drugs account for around $50 billion in spending and affect roughly 9 million people.
Some drug makers are legally challenging the new policy. U.S. Attorney Martina Estrada says a crackdown on the Quackbot malware platform by the Justice Department and partners worldwide will have a big impact.
By stopping Quackbot and dismantling Quackbot, we're saving consumers and victims tens of millions of dollars of losses throughout the world.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. When one community reports an increase in overdose deaths, it's not usually confined to that one area. Public health officials in Racine County are reporting an increase in overdose deaths, which could indicate a regional rise. Many drugs are being cut with fentanyl, and most counties are now offering fentanyl test strips to check the legitimacy of illegal drugs. That includes Milwaukee and Waukesha counties. A town square redevelopment in Watertown is getting honored by the feds. The Benson Family Town Square Brownfield Project has been awarded the EPA Region 5 Brownfield Success Award. The project revitalized the downtown area through a collaboration of funding sources. A printing press formerly on the site required a special cleanup. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
If you want some nice flowers, come to my house. I'm not going to tell you where that is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Johnny Lupinacci off tonight doing the thing you're supposed to do with his daughters at back to school night. Our guest is Dr. Nancy Bailey. We are talking about her blog, 10 Years Later, The Continuing Intentional Unraveling of America's Public Schools. Numbers 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. If you want to call, join in. She's got a long list of things, so I would recommend going to the blog and seeing them. Nancy, we were hitting some of them, but during the break, we kind of got into a little bit because we mentioned during the last part of the show, Secretary Cardona's tweet about education, public education, workforce alignment, and how that really dissed some people. And I made the comment too, though. I don't really think Secretary Cardona, President Biden, and so for all of those of you who are on the other, quote, other side, you think that all we do is ever criticize the right. I don't think that Biden, Cardona, the Obama, Duncan Democrats, they didn't see anything wrong with that tweet, because I don't think if we said, why don't you run on public schools are the cornerstone of democracy? I don't know that they would, because I think that frightens them too, because the idea of, you know, giving education to the masses as a public good that liberates people to freedom and democracy, I'm not sure Biden, Cardona Democrats would want that either.
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, they had President Obama had the Gates Foundation really ensconced in the DOE. So, I mean, I think that there's just a lot of corporate involvement and corporate push for what they want out of schools, which I think started even with A Nation at Risk. There was really never any president, was there, after President Reagan that pushed back on
it's been 40 years of Democrats, Republicans combined together, you know, marching, you know, at this anti-progressive education, anti-democratic public education. You know, if Democrats get control, it was just turned into more of a, you know, we'll give you more money for hyperachievement, but we're still going to really look at public schools not as a way of promoting freedom, public democracy, civic responsibility, acceptance, the bringing together, all those things. In fact, that is one of your other, you point out corporations and politicians. It hasn't changed.
It really hasn't. One thing I'd like to mention is the very sorry state of affairs that's taking place in Houston right now with the Houston Independent School District. They have a new superintendent who's not an educator that I know of, and who apparently has worked with the Broad Foundation, which we know how that goes. It's kind of about breaking up schools, right? And, you know, he started by, you know, closing the libraries for some of the poorest schools there and turning them into disciplinary centers. And, you know, that's another real serious issue I find is the closing of school libraries in our nation. What does that tell you? And when people say we need to have kids learning how to read, I mean, there's research that shows if when children have good libraries, they are usually better at reading. Who would think?
There you go again. We're citing research. My goodness. Who would, you know, I point that one out to a lot of people. It's like the idea of literally, you know, particularly early childhood, you know, the number of books, and Dolly Parton, we've talked about her work to really get, you know, books in people's houses. People are like, Tim, what are books going to do if the kids can't read them? It's like, you know what? The research is clear. The more books just physically around kids, the better their reading achievement is. It's like, you know, like, it's like, you know, this isn't Slecker, Bailey, Lupinacci. This isn't our opinion. It just says this. And so you're sitting there going, and yeah, now to do away with libraries in Houston public schools and turn them into detention or kind of discipline centers.
It's for the poor,
right? And it's like, who? That's the other question, is to say, when a library, and some of these things, as you said, arts, class size, whenever these things go in the wrong direction, I think that's the first thing to ask is whose kids are suffering from this? Because most of the time, it's not mine and your kids, Nancy, or your grandkids, or you know, Anya's future relatives and kids, or anything like that, or any of us. It's other kids, other people's.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, and I don't want to say that I don't think that some children do need extensive phonics instruction. You know, I used to be a resource reading teacher, and I know that is important, but every school should have a school library that's well-resourced, and there's no reason why that these libraries have been closed, and also that librarians have lost their jobs, that art teachers, real art teachers, have lost their jobs. You know, every school should have the qualified teachers they need as well. And, of course, that's a serious issue right now, too, because with teachers leaving, they're, you know, bringing in anybody almost to teach. And
They are bringing in anybody.
That's right. it was interesting, again, back at the in Houston, the superintendent came out and said, well, they have filled all the classrooms with a teacher, but, you know, people came back from the union there and said, wait a minute, you've maybe filled the classroom, but we're not assured who that is.
We're not a teacher. Yeah. In fact, I've seen that trick done again, you know, back, you know, where Anya is in Wisconsin. They tried doing that when I was there. You know, we'll call you a, you know, emergency licensed teacher. And I used to tell people, I'm like, beware if you get the announcement that your child's teacher is an emergency licensed teacher, because what emergency licensed teacher doesn't mean that person's not a great person who doesn't want to do great by your kid, but it means not a teacher. Okay. There is no such thing as emergency licensed, you know, fighter pilots. No emergency licensed brain surgeons. Okay. So when you hear emergency licensed teacher, no such thing. Speaking though, you made this part though too, to reading, talking about that, you know, you know, we're back in another reading wars again. And you said, hey, look, I'm not about intensive phonics. Give us a little bit more on, you know, your concerns with, you know, reading instruction.
Well, again, with reading, my big concern is the push for very young children to be reading before they're maybe ready. A lot of children, you know, develop a little bit at different rates, and that's okay, you know.
Yeah.
But I think there's just this real fear, like we were talking about a little bit before, that if your child isn't reading by first grade, then they won't be reading by third grade, and then they're going to be retained. And, you know, so parents feel like if their child's not reading by kindergarten, then there's a problem. And so I fear that we have a lot of kids that are being identified as having reading problems who maybe haven't been given the chance to develop. And, you know, I know we need to watch children and make sure that they do have some of the signs that they're able to read. But I do feel like making reading into emergency can't be very, very enjoyable for children. Mm-hmm. And so that's a real concern for me right now. But I think the push down for expectations is happening in K through 12 across the board. I mean, in high school, I think, back to the workforce again, there are a lot of companies pushing for their programs to even be in the high school. And so, you know, high school kids should be allowed to develop also. Why do we have everybody feeling like they have to take advanced placement, for example? Why do all kids feel like they have to take college in high school? I've never understood that, but that advanced placement is a privatized program. So,
That push, you're saying, it's like we're, you know, even the younger kids pushing younger kids to be, and then pushing older kids. And it's all, it feels like pushing them to be ready for the next thing, right? And we're talking about, you know, we've had some great guests and co-hosts on the show, Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie, you know, talking about, you know, social emotional regulation, and in fact how a lot of their job was essentially trying to help kids recognize, no, you know, learning how to be present. And you think about that, you're like, wait a minute, why would that be so hard? Well, just think what Nancy Bailey just put out there. When we're hitting three-year-olds with the intensity that you as a three-year-old are going to let us down if you're not reading by the time you're three and a half. Is it any wonder that when we get to high school that we have to now teach kids to regulate themselves in the point of going, like, take your time, let go of that stress? Well, it's like, wait a minute, we've been programming them from the time they were, right? You know, the idea that we're now teaching mindfulness to high school kids, it's like, you know, well, of course we should be, but then how did it ever happen to turn out that way? You've got some other areas there too. Again, it's 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of America's public schools. Speaking of teachers, you know, we were talking about it. The teacher shortage, is that our continuing fear, Nancy?
Well, you know, I think that when people talk about teacher shortages, I think we've been talking about this for so many years, but it's really, I think, teachers being driven out of their schools, you know, and certainly COVID. When you think about COVID and how teachers were just treated with such disrespect afterwards, it's just amazing to me to see teachers and to hear teachers being blamed for school closures. Teachers don't have control over that. When I went to the doctor, I had to wear a mask. The doctors all demanded that for their offices, even longer than schools. And they would apologize and say, oh, we have to do this. So, you know, for teachers to be blamed, is that not an intentional thing to drive teachers out? Right. I don't feel like I fear that the real drive right now in our schools truly is to replace teachers with tech. And, you know, maybe with COVID, it seemed like a lot of people thought that might happen, that parents might like it, but it backfired and they didn't like it. So,
yeah, I wonder if that actually kind of stalled that one out a little bit. Yeah, you know, it's right there. So nancybailey.com. Nancy, what else should people be looking for other than your website? Again, your books, plug your books out there so that people can go out and grab them.
Well, I have Losing America's Schools and I have to go and look up. And also, Misguided Education Reform is another. And of course, I was also honored to do a book, to co-author the book with Diane Ravitch on EdSpeak. Right. And so I'm proud of all three of those books. They were a lot of work. But I enjoyed writing. And I wish that the changes, the positive changes would happen in our schools, and we have to keep hoping. But right now isn't a good time for America, and I think our schools are really a reflection of that.
Our schools are a reflection of that, but the reality is our schools are the best hope for that change.
They really are.
It really is. Check it out, nancybailey.com, Nancy Bailey's education website. When we get back, Busted Pencils, producer Anya and Tim will break it down. Nancy Bailey, thanks for busting pencils.
Thank you. Take care.
Back after the break.
Hey, I'm ready. I gotta set up something for. I have two more shows tonight because.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Day.
No, I.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. How we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Clear skies tonight with lows around 49. Northeasterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. High temperatures reach up to 70. Tomorrow, ample sunshine expected. Clear skies and quiet again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 49. High temperatures reach up to 74. Thursday, under clear skies. 82 Friday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 70 degrees.
Your home for the Devil's Advocates.
Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
On The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
We are the children you reject and disregard. These aching cries come from the bottom of our hearts.
We are sometimes crying, busted pencils. Fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Our guest was Dr. Nancy Bailey. Check out nancybailey.com, Nancy Bailey's education website. 10 years later, the continuing intentional unraveling of America's public schools. 10 years, you know, we even talked about this 40 years. Producer Anya, last week, though, you gave us the, you know, the younger person's perspective.
When you say, you know, younger,
I'm not going to reveal how much younger, but
thank you.
You hear, you know, Johnny and I talk, you know, 40 years ago, 10 years ago, perspective, does this ring true that, like, I mean, what is your experience when you hear, you know, Dr. Nancy Bailey making the pitch for why the arts are important?
Yeah.
Tell me, I mean, what does that say to you?
Yeah. So I'll put it in perspective in this way without revealing my age. Like, I entered the public school system in 2003, and I started teaching as a tutor in 2014. So, you know, I, as a student and also as a teacher, have been not around for a long time, but around for this very particular past decade of education and two decades of education for me. And it's hard. And she's right. Like, we are, as a country, constantly defunding the arts. And when you talk about teaching mindfulness, it's like, you know, within the formula of public school, of which there are many criticisms to be made, of course, like, we don't necessarily or shouldn't necessarily need, like, emotional regulation class. That's kind of what the arts were in many ways providing. It's the same thing with, like, well, we need a logic and we need a reasoning class. And it's like, do you mean math, hon? Do you mean the classes we already have? Why not just, you know, get to the core of those topics and be like, oh, they were always serving a purpose. Like, PE wasn't supposed to be about getting kids ripped. It was like, let's make sure they run at least a little bit during the day. And now it's something totally different, it seems. We've lost the plot.
Well, that's a great, you know, the arts, right? Phys ed, you know, the idea that we see these sometimes as, you know, essentially add-ons occasionally. And in fact, you know, I've written about this many, many times. The idea that we take first graders, and I put this out in a blog that I wrote last year for Diane Ravitch, a reality, you know, didn't reveal the teachers' names, but, you know, the idea that a teacher, and again, back to teachers quitting, but a teacher I had worked with who was quitting because she had enough of taking her first graders and being required, the first graders who didn't do well on the morning literacy exercises had to then stay in for recess.
Yeah.
to do more literacy work.
Yeah.
And she was just like, Tim, I can't. I'm done.
Yeah.
It's your hands up on you.
Well, I'm giving you 5 minutes.
I'm giving you
5 minutes, mister. Okay. But I also, you know, my first teaching job was an after-school tutor. And what I wasn't told during the whole interview process, what I wasn't told until day one of teaching is, and I'm from Wausau, the literally 99% of the kids I was given, it's because English was not the language at home. And the language at home specifically was Hmong. And it's like this whole other issue where I'm like, well, yeah, they don't get the word problem. They're having trouble with the language. And sending them to me, a 15-year-old girl, for 30 minutes after school is not going to change that. I'm sorry. But
right.
How is this the only solution that was come up with at that time? That's the feeling, right? I'm glad I could be there, but I was not the trained person. When you talk about hiring anybody, I look back at how little training I had. I'm like, why was I here? Why did we do it this way?
Well, now you're getting into the qualifications of, who is that person? You're saying it's a tutor, but, you know, yeah, it's just like, okay, so, and again, extra work, you know, extra time. There's nothing wrong with, quote, tutoring people
to give
them some extra help. But when you start, you know, saying, you know, like, why, you know, I think about these first graders that the teacher I worked with at that time, who just, you know, every recess, in fact, the way she explained it to me, she was like, you know, those kids had pretty much just, you know, realized they're never going to go to recess.
No.
And so they had already assumed that they'll be in for recess.
And how demoralizing is that? And how does that motivate that kid to get better? Because when you're little, think about when you were little and everything was so big, getting recess taken away, just throw me in a pit of vipers, man. That
there
sounds
you go,
easier.
Right?
And then we wonder, like, why don't they want to learn? Well,
what? Well, and you sit there and go, and here's the, you know, recess is like this time wasted. No,
not.
It's actually part of the learning process.
Yes.
If you want, you need a break. You need an opportunity to let the mind go and to be out there. And in fact, recess is learning.
It is.
It's a whole new way for that time. And you just say, it's just like, no, we're going to take that away. Arts, that moment in time where the students get to transition and get to think differently, that's not extra time for, you know, something that, hey, if you, as long as you're reading and doing your math on time, we'll give you some time with art. It's like, no, in fact, if you're not doing your reading and math on time, give them more art. Because chances are, as Nancy Bailey pointed out, is that who are those kids? And most of the time, these are the kids that don't have the opportunity for, you know, quality play, that don't have the arts at home. And the fact that we're going to take those away while they're in school, no, kids need those. All kids need these. But kids coming from backgrounds where they don't have those, the idea that remediation of those kids requires they not get, think about that. Those kids do not get right there. You should then hear yourself and saying, oh, that doesn't make sense. Why would I say those kids do not get? Those kids get. They get art. They get music. They get recess. They get extended time to draw. They have books at home. They get libraries that are richly filled with books. They get all of those things. You know, Anya, right? It's just like, when we talk about this, it's like we can get really upset and down, as Nancy Bailey said. I frame this as going back. How about, though, we sit there and go, like, here's a positive campaign. All children, public schools, they get it. They get what they need.
Exactly.
They get what they deserve. Busted Pencils, fully vetted. See you next week.
Want more Busted Pencils? Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils or log on to BustedPencils.com for blogs, podcasts, and more. Join us again next Tuesday for Busted Pencils on Devil Radio 92.7.
Thank you.
direct from the dairy state. It's Sharp Cheddar Weekends, a three-hour block of Wisconsin-produced radio, Saturdays and Sundays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m., featuring Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman, The Cripes Cast with Charlie Behrens, and Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown. You can enjoy it by the slice or enjoy the whole darn thing. Sharp Cheddar Weekends is radio so fresh, it squeaks. Listen in on the Civic Media station or on the app.
Miss our conversations on air? Join the discussion on our social media channels. Find Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can also find social media for specific shows and hosts on our website. Go to civicmedia.us.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.